What, you dare me
what,
to make
you,
it about
dare
feminism?
Me to make it about feminism?
Because I can make it about
because
feminism.
I can make it about feminism.
You are now listening you to the are Feminist now listening Bar podcast. To the Feminist Bar podcast.
What is good? What is poppin'? Welcome to the Feminist Bar podcast with your host, Chinatsu Emaka. And welcome to another episode in the 80,000 Too Many Abortion series. The 80,000 Too Many Project is an abortion demystifying project by Feminist Voices Zimbabwe that really aims to educate and disseminate information on safe abortion and map the ways that we can move towards unrestricted safe abortion in Zimbabwe and really in any other region, because a majority of us were colonized by the same people, so we more or less have the same laws. But anyway, I will not be getting into that today. Today, we are going to be talking about reproductive violence and reproductive justice. And yeah, I don't want to pick favorites, but this is kind of like my favorite episode in this series. And before we go on, I just want to shout out to our donors, the Urgent Action Fund and Black Feminist Fund, for making this series possible, for making this project possible, for believing in the vision of young feminists. My guest today is Shamian.
Hey, welcome to the pod again.
Yes, welcome. Every time you're on here, it's so discoursey that people end up thinking the deepest thunks they've ever thought in their whole life.
No, and it helps because to feed some narcissism, because when I listen back, I'm like, oh my god, this is my voice.
You're like,
so
yeah,
bad for Leos.
So yeah, every time you're on here, you take us through thinking about things in, you know, so many different ways that a lot of people previously might not have. So I'm really excited to have you here and, you know, to specifically talk about this. I am super, yeah, super passionate about abortion. How are you feeling about this episode?
I'm very excited. I think the time really matched because it's a conversation I was kind of having. So I've spoken about this online, but I actually belong to a group of women. It's an online group with women of different ages, and this is right on theme. We were talking about reproductive violence, agency, and all of these things, making choices. And so yeah, I think the episode really came at the right time and fits the kind of mind frame that I'm in already.
We're not going to waste any more time. Like, we're just going to get into it, and maybe we can start kind of by talking a little bit about what reproductive violence is, really scratching beneath the surface. And just a side note, like, I'm starting to realize that, like, every time like organizations get a little bit of money and they start doing a lot of big work, they become very specific and very political about the kind of language that they use, and they want to like stay away from certain things because they don't want to rile up like donors. And I'm just thinking about why that is the reason that there's actually not a lot of resources on reproductive violence, because in order to talk about reproductive violence, honestly, you need to talk about the role that men play in society in their contribution of violence. But anyway, I guess we're going to get into it.
So reproductive violence for me is like a series of actions done towards something specifically to do with concerning their sexual agency, and has to do with kind of taking away that right and giving them limited choices when it comes to that. So off the top of my head, I'd be thinking about things like forced sterilization, coerced pregnancies, abortions, forced abortions, safe abortions, denial of these things, and yeah, stealthing and so on. So that's what I would think, but I think you have a better definition.
I was also just thinking about like female genital mutilation as you were talking about that. But I think where I'm at in the conversation, how I've thought about it so far, is just reproductive justice to me is when women and queer people and everyone feel not only perfectly situated, but perfectly empowered and informed to kind of make decisions around like their reproductive and sexual health. So when I think about like reproductive violence, I think about like people just not having that anymore. For example, something as simple as a woman feeling that she has to be pregnant or else, like pregnancy pressure to me, within, like, for example, a marital setting. To me, that's reproductive violence. It's coercive. I think of the way that women are now kind of disempowered and disenfranchised from negotiating, negotiating condom use, negotiating contraceptives, negotiating, like, why must you make decisions about wearing condom in this house? Like, if you don't make any money, that's something that a lot of women go through. And I myself have gone into the field and done field work where women were telling me, like, oh, like, my husband is not letting me suggest we wear condoms, even though I know that he's cheating on me. And he just says that I don't make enough money to make those decisions. And even where they were making enough money, see, because patriarchy is always changing the goalposts, it was, well, I am the man of the house anyway, or the Bible says, or this and that. So all roads kind of lead to women not having as much power to just say yes, or to say no, or to say I'll think about it in kind of like reproductive situations.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. And I actually thought of adding another thing to it, particularly within the Zimbabwean context, and that is also labia elongation, because it sort of extends the duration of reproductive violence, like this kind of interference with personal freedom and autonomy.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what's interesting about that is things, for example, like labia pulling have had to like really be like very included within like international instruments, because the way the people that are defining FGM are, like, at the UN there, are Asian. And they only consider FGM to be like the cutting of the labia or the clitoris. So labia pulling, gray area, technically, but we all know that it's not, you know? So that actually would be, to me, like an institutional level of reproductive violence.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of. Yeah, because that is...
I think it's been thematized so much to the extent where we don't see it. But I think that's the starting point of kind of reproductive violence, if we're to find one, especially within a Zimbabwean context. Because where else are you being taught that you need to do something to your body, this is the way it is, and there are consequences for it? So that falls into kind of feeling like if somebody says no, when you have your own meaning over a certain condition, you want to use a condom, you want to be on birth control, you feel like they have a voice that matters, when in fact it doesn't matter when it's your body. So I think that's also very important.
I love what you've said, because you've then mentioned the community, and just like that, we kind of went full circle around what reproductive violence looks like on a personal level, on a community level, and on an institutional level. But on an institutional level, like, we as the community, as individuals in our like interpersonal relationship, how are we talking about bodies? How are we talking about pregnancy? How are we talking about women's fertility? How are we talking about the decisions that women make around their fertility? And I think when we are talking about things very negatively, which a majority of the time we still are, people still use termination of pregnancies as insults. That on a community level, I think we can bear the burden. We can bear the duty of saying, to an extent, we could do better. But the only reason that we could do better is because those before us could have done better, and those before them. But at the same time, we were also kind of working with what we had. But the point is that we should not be afraid to look at each other and be like, we need to pull up our socks. We need to talk more openly about abortion. We need to talk more openly about the fact that teenagers are having sex. We need to talk more openly about sexuality. We need to talk more openly about the trans experience, about whoever's experienced. Do you know what I mean? So on a community level, I think failing to kind of sometimes mobilize amongst ourselves, or even learn from our own previous lessons, I think that is, to the extent that we could make changes in reproductive violence, that is what we can do.
I think for most people, there's a kind of anxiety that comes with having certain conversations and engaging in them at a community level, for fear of being labeled and being categorized as something. We want to be seen as varied people. We don't want something to consume our entire being and be the only thing that we're known for. And I think when it comes to these things where moral appeals or emotional appeals are made, people are very afraid of then not being given the opportunity to be varied. You don't just want to be the abortion warrior. You don't want to be the, oh, she only has sex on her mind type of woman. And so that kind of has an impact on the kind of conversations that we have, the kind of community progress that we have. And that's because the parameters of the conversation are set. And so when you have a kind of issue with reproductive violence and so on, trying to find ways of institutionalizing justice and so on, the issue is it's been diminished so much to a silly woman's conversation, to a sex worker's conversation. So you want to talk about reproductive rights. Why do you want to talk about condoms? And I remember like even asking this question, like whether or not women were comfortable carrying condoms with them in their bag or something. And it was something that was seen also as unusual because, again, nobody wants to be seen as a person who's already ready for sex. And it's the same way as well with denial of contraception as well within like teenagers, not acknowledging that they have sex, because then that means they've lost the plot. Only people who don't care about success think about that. And so we're having this kind of conversation that has to some extent been diminished in terms of its value, its impact, in spite of it having a really, really huge impact. So I think that's also something to consider. And we want to kind of change that in our society and kind of direct people towards, I guess, a better society for all of us, for women, girls, gender non-conforming persons of trans identities and so on.
Yeah, that is very true. That is kind of the biggest obstacle to community organizing, because once we start having like these conversations, it becomes like a very divided conversation, and it is literally divided by, well, that is morally wrong. And it's like, honestly, when we talk about sexual reproductive health rights and people start to talk about religion, I feel like I'm talking to a brick wall, and I just feel so uncomfortable when people center themselves and their beliefs in things that impact everyone else, because I'm trying to like scream like, do you not see the bigger picture? Can you only see as far as yourself? Let's talk about what all of this means to us as feminists, to our movement building. I talk a lot about how I love talking about abortion so much because I feel that something about it, everything about it, is so significant to the emancipation of all people, literally. And I find that the choice to start a family, to reproduce, is one that is so personal that if it is regulated, then we have lost not only like our privacy and our dignity, but that means that all other rights that concern our privacy and our dignity are also the business of the state. So are we still people? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, definitely. I agree. I think for me, I've always viewed abortions as something that I would want to have the option to vlog, because it's a part of life. It's a fact of life. Some people find out they're pregnant and they end them. Some people go through with it and some people lose the pregnancy. However that happens, it's still a fact of life, and I've been very open about it. I think for me, my role, and when I think about just being a feminist, especially within this space, is allowing myself to very publicly admit that this is something that I'm willing to do, in order to allow other people to also have a sort of comfort when they talk to me, or for them to feel represented, especially when there's so much stigma surrounding it. And so, yeah, it's very important that I remain visible. Although I haven't had an abortion yet, it's something I'm very open to. I don't know what decision I'll make in that time, but it's something that I'm very open to. In fact, the first thing I looked for when I moved countries was an abortion clinic. I'm not even going to lie. It's part of my starter pack. Even when I moved I lived in Cape Town before, this was one of the first things I found, because it's kind of the thing I used to gauge how progressive a society and a community is. If they can't offer me the service that is so time sensitive, then it's not very useful. And so for me, it's really important that I continue to verbalize and be seen as somebody who not only advocates for it, is a safe space for people who may be wanting to get an abortion, and to always have information readily available, especially to give people like options to safe abortion providers. Not just, believing in abortion and then giving you a backhouse kind of abortion, but really having the information. I take it as my duty to be well informed about the subject so I can help other people, always have like an open mind and all of that. Yeah. But yeah, for me, really, I would love to vlog it. That's the best way I can say. I want to have the power, the choice to vlog it if I'm physically okay, you know, enough.
There's actually a project in the United States. They're called the Abortion Project, and they are photographers. And I think, I don't know if they're vloggers, but I think they're just photographers. And what you do is you sign up or you apply to them to like come to you if you're getting an abortion, and they will basically take pictures of you the whole time as you are having your self-administered home abortion. And it's really artistic, and the thing is, they don't just come by themselves to just like, it's not just like two random people taking pictures of you. They also, like, if you are accepted, they also bring like two abortion doulas. So now you're getting like full free healthcare and getting to like document this experience with people who do this all the time, who know what this is like and who know like exactly what to say and exactly what to do, which I just think is so fucking cool.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly how I imagine it. I imagine an abortion, of course, very traumatic. I think we mustn't discount this. Something can be wanted and still traumatic, but regardless of the fact, giving birth is traumatic, but still wanted, actually. Let's just get that out of the way. But I would want the process to be the same, because I'm making a choice that must be celebrated. Why is it an issue? I think, yeah, I would want to be that really artistic. And I really love the existence of abortion doulas in the West. I'm not sure about the existence of abortion doulas in the global South. Do you know anything about it?
So I don't think that we have the language that is abortion doulas, but as far as rural and high density community areas go, you know that a majority of the clinics that are there, or the safe spots that are there for people to get abortions, for even people to give birth, any type of fertility management really is the result of older women in that community coming together and providing that service. And if someone is providing you with if a midwife or a nurse is in a community and they are providing you with a service from the time that you start getting your abortion to providing you with aftercare to possibly even being present with you during an abortion, that to me sounds like an abortion doula. We might not be calling it that. We might be calling it Maita Tenda from number whatever, whatever, or the nurse from Three Street down. But it's also interesting because as I start to think about this, I start to think about what is an unsafe abortion to certain communities. Do you get what I mean? Like, we know what an unsafe abortion is to someone else. What might then be the safest option is that nurse who retired 10 years ago. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But with the systems in place and the policies in place, then we don't even have to have those conversations about, okay, what might somewhat be safe? Maybe this will be a little bit safe, or, oh, this is safer than this, because everyone will be getting access to one service, and it will be an intersectional service that really encompasses all sexual reproductive health rights, not just abortion, but just the way that we want to family plan and the way that we just want to, the way that we want to manage our bodies.
Yeah, that's true. And things free as well.
And shame free as well, because I think it's one of the greatest barriers we have. Like, people are afraid to openly say they want this, or they want the service available even for others, because there's a lot of shame attached to it.
So really, I think some of that kind of talks about why it's so important for the feminist movement. But I just think also thinking about when women cannot access abortions, when women have been shamed, or there's so much stigma attached to getting abortions, who stands to benefit from that?
That's really important. Yeah. I think, you know what? Just this week, somebody texted me, because a woman they know, I'm not going to explain this fully for reasons, because they're in Zimbabwe. This woman is pregnant with her child, and multiple children, basically, in a very short space of time. I'm trying to remove details just in case somebody hears this off the off chance the person connected to this hears this. And they recently found out that the reason why they kept getting pregnant was because the husband had been tampering with the birth control pill. And this is also another example of reproductive violence. And the reason why is, of course, she was married very young, if we can call it that, and she really wants to go back to university. Now she has more than three children minimum, and is expecting more. And this man has been doing it. In fact, he took it upon himself to laugh this past week about how she really thought she'd be going back to university, and he was doing everything in his power to keep her at home. And I think this is really an example of
the kind of reality Zimbabwean women live in. And it doesn't matter if you are unmarried or married. The result of finding that you've basically had your right taken away from you, that someone has been doing everything in their power to stomp on your agency, is to seek for a way out. And right now, this person really wants to have an abortion, but we've made it so that we can collude with her abuser. We can collude with the abuser so she ends up having to give birth. And I think that's also kind of who benefits from this. It's not women. It's not people who carry children. It's not people who are impacted. Girls, boys, whoever. They don't benefit from this. Whoever benefits from it is definitely much higher up. And of course, men who benefit largely from patriarchy. It's not women. It's not people who are having their agency denied. They are trying to look for a way out. And she'll probably look for some kind of backyard abortion service, because who knows, she's really, really desperately trying to get out of the situation. And this is the kind of dilemma that people are served with. That's the goal of patriarchy, of abortion bans, of these infringements, is to kind of serve women and people who give birth with like very few options when there are many more that could be available. And I think that's really, really sad.
Yeah, absolutely. Every time you hear a person talking about how they were coerced into pregnancy, it usually comes down to their partner being, them already being in an existing abusive situation, and someone is trying to use reproducing to ground them into a place. Everybody knows that when you have children, the financial, physical, mental and emotional burden of your life increases, right? I'm sorry, maybe it's not a burden. Maybe, you know what I mean?
Parasite.
Anyway, what you need to pour increases, and it makes it very difficult. For example, if you are already economically and financially disenfranchised, it makes it very difficult for you to then leave a situation. So that is a tactic of abusers to keep people and their victims in those situations. So again, who stands to benefit from that? And even when you look at it from the perspective of kind of like heteropatriarchy and capitalism, it's like, who stands to benefit when there are more poor people existing? Who stands to benefit when there are more vulnerable communities to exploit? Who stands to benefit when they need like 100,000 workers in the new factory where they want to make people work like for 20 cents an hour? I know that like this is kind of unraveling, and it's all like a little knot that is unraveling. And one might listen to this and be like, okay, these bitches are crazy. But no, I think there is a reason why the history of contraception. And yeah, please go ahead, take it.
I definitely concluded that it is a way of farming humans. Abortion bans, for me, conclusively are human farms. You are definitely, there's nothing else. There's no precedent for it, like no other sphere where you can uphold something else's right over another. There's no other sphere where this kind of argument stands. And I think it's very telling as well, the kind of procedures and cultural norms that we have that also facilitate this. Because as you were speaking, I was just thinking about how one of the things women are told when they have these unwanted, unexpected pregnancies is they should have been on birth control. But when we also make it that women cannot access birth control, cannot like access contraception, and we make it very difficult, we're basically creating this kind of cyclical flow where they always end up in the same place. And you're right for asking who benefits. Capitalism, patriarchy. It is the surest way of making sure women remain dignified and humble in our kind of society. There's nothing else that will have the kind of consequences for women like pregnancy does. Even marriage, sometimes you can leave. If you are married and infertile, your chances of success of leaving might even be higher than if you're pregnant, if you have children. And I think it's deliberate. Even flowing on from that, like the choice to have a child, it is also diminishing. I think around 2012, 2013, the African Commission on Human Rights and People's Rights and so on should have released some kind of report on forced sterilizations that were going and being done towards women who had HIV. And this was something completely shocking to read and see, because again, it tells us that there is somebody else who feels they have the kind of legal and moral rights to make reproductive decisions on behalf of women. So if we're letting women, and for making decisions is just like we make for factories for machinery, then it means conclusively abortion rights are definitely ways of farming human beings. It's all on the chain of production.
I really think that understanding how so like organized and so detailed and so yet so delusional, but just so very intentional patriarchy is in placing people where they are now. So, like when we talk about, I hate when we talk about like vulnerable communities. It's like vulnerable communities. We're trying to like help the vulnerable communities. It's like, who is making them vulnerable? Who is making these people vulnerable? Maybe if we stopped the vulnerability, they wouldn't be so vulnerable. Do you know what I mean? And I
exactly.
Just, yeah.
Exactly.
And I guess, you know, being here today, you know, I wonder if any of our donors are listening to this and thinking this is insane. Please don't miss it. Put it down. We love you guys so much, but at the crux of it, this is why we want to do this work, because we want to unpack things at a level that maybe other people feel that they can't. Maybe other people do not necessarily have the perspective to unpack it. You know, I am a 28-year-old African queer feminist who has had an abortion and has spoken about it a lot online and has experienced what it is like to go through it, to be in the system, to see how, like, what you have to do to go through it and then had to keep surviving after. And having had that experience, nothing will put you in your place like trying to get an abortion in Africa. I'll tell you that. And having had endless conversations with people who are getting abortions, are looking for abortion aftercare, whatever, it is like, it makes you feel so small. And I don't know if the people out there in Australia, in Canada, in the US, if people in the West, I don't know if the system makes them feel just as small, but here it makes you feel small. And it makes you feel so small that if you are not decided, you may not go through with it at all. So that's not fair. And having had some of that kind of insight, I see kind of how big the system is, because when you feel like minute.
Yeah.
What is the crumb of minute? You feel small, because every step that you take, every piece of paper that you need to apply for, every single nurse that you need to talk to, every whatever, you're more or less A, groveling, B, realizing that this is not something that is accessible to everyone. So you're hoping that you're going to be part of the people who manage to access it. You're probably not being treated very well, but at this point you don't care, because all you care about is in the very least getting the service. And all of that to me actually is still reproductive violence, because even if I was able to access an abortion, I should have been able to access an abortion with peace and with the solid support system that was coming from the institution that was providing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. I think if the listeners don't know, this is in the book, guys. Get the book. Plug. Yeah, no, that was really traumatic. Even reading about it, I was very traumatized. I was shouting online for 2 weeks at least. I think that's deliberate. Like, when you hear about, especially as a Zimbabwean, that, you know, South Africans have access to abortion services, you expect it to be a dignified process. But there's kind of this need to humiliate people and kind of extend the suffering of people who are going through this process. And I think that's deliberate. I think there are people within the system as well who really want it to be, you know, extremely painful and hurtful. Yeah. And, you know, like, even looking back at it, I even know someone in the same system who had a miscarriage and then was accused of not wanting the child in the first place and all of these things, which means within the same system, there are people who still find it to be an insult, still find it to be something that is worth kind of threatening and, you know, humiliating people over. So which means the service providers themselves are not fully convinced of the importance of abortions as family planning, as healthcare, as rights, as part of the kind of integral choices women and people who give birth deserve to have.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. A lot of people want to, you know, there's a lot of great people in public health. There's a lot of people working for free, especially here in Zim, in the rural areas. And again, a majority of those people are women. But a lot of people are also just there because they want to have a 9-to-5 job. And having buy-in into something is really important in how, like, the service is delivered. And having buy-in is also why, for example, policies are changed, is why people make suggestions in parliament, is why people draft bills, is why people make general recommendations at conventions. All of those things. But people have to actually believe it in order for those things to happen. Anyway, we have gone on for a while, and unfortunately, we've reached the end of the episode. I really wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, the importance of empowerment. So empowerment of women, queer folk, non-binary folk, and where kind of that all fits into this conversation, because I think empowerment is a very different conversation, and yet it is the exact same conversation, but it goes into its entirely own thing because it is so very personal. The way that people feel about themselves and the power that they feel within and how empowered they feel to do certain things all starts on the inside. So hopefully I will be able to bring you guys another episode that has something to do with that. But do you have anything else you want to say? Do you have any other thoughts that you really want to leave on the stage?
I think I've said so many things and it was all over the place. But since we're not doing the empowerment thing now, there's really nothing more to it, I suppose, than just realizing that you have the choice, you deserve the choice. And these people who really think like you, who are willing to support you in whatever decision you want to make. And it's really important that you start by finding them. Like with this conversation, as we move ourselves forward, as we realize abortion rights and other reproductive rights in our lifetime, in Zimbabwe and many other places, it's important that you at least start by finding the community for you. So those are my parting words.
Thank you. I watched a video today that was just talking about reproductive coercion and navigating it if you are in an abusive relationship. And I will just put the link in the episode notes for this, just because I think for some people, even just realizing the extent of what is going on can be a huge awakening. And, you know, a lot of people don't have somewhere to go, but some people do. So maybe they'll realize that and they'll go somewhere. So I'll put it in the link. Feel free to share it, etc., etc. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. This has been one of the more discourse heavy episodes in the 80,000 Too Many series, which I love. So yeah, that is a wrap on this episode.